Maureen Dillon Teasdale for The Cube, 88.9 FM. And today we're talking with Jerry Cutting. Now, Jerry, you're involved with a lot of different organizations, and one of them is that you're president of Townshippers Association.
Yes, and this morning I'd like to talk particularly with that hat sitting on my head. Mm-hmm. And I think there are lots of things that are happening. And I think one of the other factors that all of us are so painfully aware of is that with COVID-19, the attention of even Townshippers Association, given that we are already very busy with a number of projects, we've had to, I think, in terms of being able to respond to community needs, particularly to ensure that the English-speaking population gets the required information in a timely fashion, and also to make sure that the care that is needed in these kinds of situations is one where there is access to good, solid health care in the English language. And that has become, I must say, within the last 2 months, quite a preoccupation with the Townshippers Association. And all along, it hasn't been all that easy because at the same time, we have just gone through a major move, moving from our traditional place where we've been there for decades on Queen Street to a new facility that is on College. So in terms of that then, what we're also trying to do is provide service while working at home, which in and of itself presents a whole host of challenges. But what I would like to bring to everybody's attention is that in terms of what we've been doing, is that we first found it quite necessary, and that is both Rachel Hunting and myself, who sit on the Regional Health Board, the Shears that is the, is that we immediately signaled that there needed to be adequate and timely information provided to the English-speaking community. And this is a bit of a challenge because in many instances, the first thing that is quoted is Bill 101. And we came right back and said, well, if Bill 101 says something very clearly, in conditions that touch on health and safety emergency measures, that information must be provided in English also. And we were, I think, very lucky because in terms of what is happening in our own region and our own health providers, there was an immediate reaction to hop onto this. The problem was getting timely translations, but nevertheless, we found there was a great deal of goodwill here. At the same time, an initiative was undertaken to inform the Secretariat for English Affairs of the branch of the provincial government that there needed to be information put out to all members of the English-speaking community. And that, of course, also presents challenges because in today's age, a lot of the knee-jerk reaction is to go immediately onto internet. And what we've been able to ascertain is that there's about a third of the English-speaking population that doesn't even have an email address. So it has to be out in print form. And I think it's now about 2 or 3 weeks, there was in the Sherbrooke Record the important pamphlet that had already gone out a couple weeks before in French and now was available in English. And we were one of the first of the areas that were able to have that. But we're still keeping the pressure on so that the objective from the provincial government now has been clearly articulated by working with QCGN on this, that they will use at the provincial level a measure of what is an English-speaking, how do we determine who is an English-speaking person? And they've gone to Revenue Quebec, and they found that there are over 800,000 people who submit their income tax in English, and therefore that will be the measure. So that having printed only 50,000 copies, they were very, very short. So there is a massive printing, and this will be going out, and our understanding it will be in the mail. unfortunately comes at a time when we are already starting to go into the loosening up of the lockdown. So that is something that's coming, but at least it's coming.
The pamphlet is going out by mail?
Yes, it will be. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure exactly when that's going to happen, because in the present situation, what is also being found is that printing companies have, to a great extent, been functioning at minimal level or no level at all. So getting that done is a major obstacle to getting them. And that first, there has to be a printed mm-hmm. copy before it can be mailed out.
What is exactly the information in the pamphlet?
It contains just about everything you'd want to know in respect to COVID-19. How do you identify that you might have the symptoms? Where do you go to get tested? What do you do if you have to put yourself into quarantine? And what are details of how and when and where you need to go to access services? So this can be an important document. At the same time, we know that the media in general, providing a great deal of information that is useful to people. It is also kind of troubling when we look at the figures across Canada and see that Quebec is leading the way in terms of almost, or I think it's surpassed, the more than half of the diagnosed cases of COVID-19 are in Quebec.
That is disturbing. When you said one-third of the population don't have an email address, is that in the townships or in Quebec?
That's in Quebec in general.
Okay.
And see, I think what we're talking about is predominantly a population that is probably over 65, and a population that in many instances may also be in a long-term health care structure, and we know that those places have turned out to be the most dangerous places you can live right now in the province. And if you look at 96 or 97% of all of the people who have succumbed and died because of COVID-19 have been in these care facilities. So what it's highlighted is that there needs to be a huge overhaul of how these institutions are run. And we also have to understand, too, is that there was a recent survey done, and it was done by Jack Jedwall, who's done a lot of research into the English community of Quebec. And what he found is that there's quite a substantial difference between the French and English population in terms of just their fear of the disease. And what he found is that there's 76% of all the English speakers that were surveyed, that's just throughout the whole province, are afraid for their family members. And I think in particular, if they have a family member in one of the long-term care facilities, as compared to 59% for the French-speaking population. Mm-hmm. And in terms of looking at that, and also if you look at the number of people that are really quite concerned about their own health, we're looking at pretty much, you know, at least two-thirds of the English population is very much concerned, as compared to 1 in 5 in the Francophone population for family or themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think what we have here is something that again targets the English population, is that we are more concerned about this disease, and in part it might be related to our overall concern about having access to healthcare services in English. And it highlights again that there is a huge area there that we need to be very, very consistent, and we need to be always, I think, looking at ways and means in which to bring to the attention of health providers and the provincial government that access to health care is a major issue with our English populations. And I think especially in a rural area where It's at times even difficult just to get to a health provider. You know, there's questions of transportation and questions about, well, how and where would I go? So timely information gets back to that. And as was pointed out very recently, is that if you walk into a hospital and there's no signage that tells you where to go, this is the first indication then that the requirement of accessibility has not been made. If you don't know where to go, then you're sure not, probably not going to ever get the service unless you wander around and ask a lot of questions. So we keep coming back to this issue time and time again. Healthcare and also education is that if you just look at the difference between the response of the French and English community to the opening of elementary schools. In the elementary sector, I think we're looking at figures of around 35%, and in some schools, it's always 15% turnout. While in the Francophone population, in many of the schools, it's up around 75%. Mm-hmm. So there's a different, I think, attitude towards the disease in the English community. It provokes fear. It provokes a sense of we, as a community, especially a minority community, are more at risk. And it may just be that we're not confident about, will we get the care we need? Will we have access to it? And certainly when you're very, very ill, you need to have someone who understands what your description of your symptoms. So anyway, we're very active on that file, and I'd just like everybody who's listening to know that this is something. And also, on the Townshipper's website, there is timely information that is put out on the website also, so you can go to Townshipper's website at any time, and there's information there, and it can point you perhaps in the right direction. So this is something else that that we've had to swing into motion on, and we've gotten great cooperation from both the federal and provincial members of politicians in general.
Okay, good.
So that's one that I think we're on the right track anyway.
Good, I think so. You're talking to Jerry Cutting, president of Townshippers Association today. Okay, so access to healthcare, very important. And you think that the English population, about 35%, sent their elementary kids back to school because of fear of access to healthcare?
Well, I think what it is that there needs to be a little bit more precision there, I think. Mm-hmm. I think people were leery or are leery about sending their kids back to school because, number one, this is the only jurisdiction in North America, apparently, at this point in time, that is actually opening schools. And I think that it's quite a legitimate fear on the part of parents thinking, well, should I be sending my kids to school? Mm-hmm. Will they come into contact? And what we know is that kids apparently don't get as sick and certainly don't become as sick as some of the elderly, but they can be carriers. So that the kids could bring the virus home, mm-hmm. and there could be members of the family that are at high risk.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, it's probably not just the fear of access to services if you get the disease, it's also just the fear of the disease itself. Am I at risk? Can I get it? And not knowing now who could be a potential carrier. I mean, we are in a situation where we've gone through a period of time where we have limited our contact to, you know, the people that we live with on a daily basis. And now it's becoming much more open, and people are going to stores, and they're going into public places. And I think anyone who drives down any street in any town will immediately notice the large number of people that aren't respecting the distancing of that whole concept of the best way to control the disease is keep our distance from other people, and how quickly it is, I think, set aside. And we know it only takes a moment of just getting close to someone who is a carrier, and you could, in fact, then become a carrier too. There are countless examples, I think, and now we're getting a lot more science here to be able to track how people have moved from contact to contact to contact. So I think it comes back to maybe an old adage: if you don't know what to do, play it safe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a perfectly legitimate response at this time. And I think all of us are probably concerned now that are we moving too fast? Are we moving in a way where we will put more people at risk? And these are legitimate questions that have to be asked. And right now, there aren't very many good answers. We just simply don't know enough about this this disease.
Exactly, and we're learning a bit more every day.
And it has to be something that all of a sudden, and I think many, many people, I'm talking about people even of my generation who are post-war babies, but we have never lived through a pandemic like the Spanish flu. We have never seen something as crushing as the Great Depression. We have never seen something as absolutely, terrorizing as a world war, where people live in circumstances where many, many families had loved ones who were on the battlefield, and there were shortages, and there were hard times that people lived through, and now we're talking about, well, what's the hardest thing that you're going through? That's a question, we put out. Well, I can't go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in perspective, it's not that bad.
No,
from
it's
that
not.
Point of view, But it is, I think, something that we have to recognize that it is a real pandemic. And I think that is now sinking in to everybody. This is a disease that it kills. And people who've been sick with it have been very, very sick. So it's not just the flu. It's the flu that can take you. And I think all of us should be concerned that even if I don't have it, if I'm a carrier, I don't know it. That's why more and more testing is absolutely necessary. And I'd like to encourage everybody, that as we build up towards being able to test as many people as possible, don't hesitate to be tested, because that gives you information that you can act on. And so if you are planning to go and see a loved one, now that we're opening up, and we'll be able to pay more visits, you don't want to be the cause of someone getting seriously ill. So play it safe, and I think it's a legitimate way of reacting right now. And as we open up more and more with caution and care, and the other thing I want to hope for is that the slogan is, we're all in this together. We'll all get through this together. And what I want to put out as a message to policymakers is that at this point in time, then, isn't it the ideal time to start looking at how we are going to better accommodate the English-speaking minority of Quebec? And we know that there were measures put in place, like Bill 40, that put school boards essentially absolutely reeling, and that it's an institution that's very important, especially in rural Quebec. And I think this might be the ideal time to step up as a government and say, you know what, we're going to put that particular move on hold at least until we get out of this pandemic. And I think that would be reassuring, because there's something else coming up. Is that if there isn't a postponement of this implementation, there will be school board elections in November. It will be for a drastically modified board, granted, but there will be elections. And one of the other factors is that many English-speaking people aren't even on the electoral list. And that's because if you don't have kids in school, or as soon as your kids are out of the English system, you're immediately transferred to the French system. And unless you take the initiative to get in touch with the English school board and say, hey, I want to be on that particular list, I want to be on the English school board voting list, you won't be. And that's another factor that we have to take into consideration. And holding elections during this very troubling time is in and of itself, I think, it's disturbing. And if you want to play it safe, then they should be postponed. And the Association of English-Speaking School Boards is very active in this file. And we are, as townshipers, giving them all of our support on this one. Mm-hmm. So that's a factor that, you know, we have to also take a look at, and how this government is going to be reacting as we move out of the pandemic. We know that on their agenda is a revision of certain parts of Bill 101. And what we'd like to get across to this government, the CAQ, is that we're in it together now. We'll be in it together after this pandemic, and a good way to show up an enormous amount of good faith and trust and accommodation is to put that revision on hold, or maybe just forget about it, because as citizens, full citizens of Quebec, all we want to do is, as a minority group, have that kind of respect and dignity that every member of this society ought to have. And laws that set us aside, and the use of the notwithstanding clause to pass legislation is an indication of an enormous amount of disrespect for the rights and privileges, they shouldn't be even called privileges, rights of our English-speaking community.
Okay, good information, Jerry. Any predictions for the future? Where do you think we'll be in another 5 months?
Well, I have never been very good with the crystal ball. So whatever I say, I think you have to put it in that context. Things are moving so fast that I don't think we can really, really predict here. One of the factors that we'll have to watch very closely, and I think it gets back to the schools. Mm-hmm. If there is a spike in new cases as a result of the opening of the schools, we are going to know something. It's concrete. It may not at all be what we want to find out. But let's say if it does happen, then we're going to have to look at making some very difficult decisions about what are we going to do in the fall. Already there are colleges and universities that have stated that they're going almost entirely to online instruction, except for laboratory work and field work. And I think we may be seeing a whole lot more of that. It presents, I think, both advantages and disadvantages to a rural population. The advantage to a rural population is that it will cut down a lot on the exposure that comes when you're in transit. Being on a bus is probably one, especially in wintertime, mm-hmm. when you can't even have circulation from putting down the windows or whatever, is an ideal breeding ground for this virus. And what if we are in a position where we can't open schools? How can you go to an effective education system where it will be everything from elementary through university, where the bulk of the instruction will occur online, until such time as there is a cure and a vaccine. I think right now, one of the other factors that we have to look at, and it's extremely important. Scientific research has become exceedingly important at this juncture. And the way out of all of this is that we simply have to be smarter than this virus. By that I mean we have to have a solid scientific evidence. We have to have proven, tested drugs, proven and tested vaccines if we're going to beat it. So I think we're looking at a period of time. It's going to be a lot longer than 5 months, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the next 5 months will tell us an awful lot. What we're predicting is that as warm weather comes and people get out more, then the virus will, like many of the influenza viruses, simply go into abeyance. But it'll come back. It'll come back with a vengeance. And that's why we have to be vaccinated every single fall against whatever is going to be biting at our lungs and organs in terms of influenza. So we need annual vaccine against that. It may well be that that's just what the future holds for COVID-19 also. So we don't know. So in looking into my crystal ball, I'm optimistic that we've got some really top-notch scientific minds working on this. And I think we're going to make some breakthroughs, and I think the breakthroughs will help us to deal with this. It will help to reduce the anxiety. Anxiety is a part of our mental health state. There's just too much anxiety, too much depression now. I think the warm weather will help us in that respect, but I think we're always going to have that little something in the back of our minds until we have proven medical practices and accessibility to those practices before we feel absolutely confident. So I think for a long time to come, maybe a year or up to 18 months, those people that we just want to grab and hug because we haven't seen them in a while, it's going to be required of, blowing kisses and symbolic hugs for a while to come.
Mm-hmm. A new social structure.
Yes.
Now, I know you don't have kids, Jerry. I know they're all growing up. But if you did have elementary school children, would you send them to school right now?
No, okay. I would not. I also my oldest son is the principal of a school in Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. I have three grandchildren, and they are being homeschooled, and the province has said absolutely no to reopening before September. Mm-hmm. And I think across the country that seems to be more the response than let's try something else. So I don't agree with this attitude that let's carry out an experiment. And in many respects, I think that opening elementary schools is really in more of a child care experiment than it is an educational experiment, because in order to get people back to work in a lot of places, parents have to stay home with elementary age students. Their kids are just too young to leave that home alone. So opening of the school will permit more people to go back to work. I think this could be a huge part of the reasoning around the opening of elementary schools. And I would have to say that, I understand that schools in terms of what's going to happen to them, there's no good time to open schools now. Whether it's this week or whether it's going to be in September, the startup is going to be difficult, and it's going to be scary, I think, for parents and for people who are working in the schools, because we just don't know so much about what's going to happen. But I think I would be, again, you know, using an old adage, if you're going to err on the side of caution. That would be my attitudes, but I know that I think every parent has to make that decision on their own, given their circumstances and given how they're reacting and what they understand of the situation at this time. But I would find it difficult to put my 6-year-old child on a school bus in the present circumstances.
I can understand that. I certainly agree with that. Any message you'd like to give to the people of the townships, Jerry?
Well, I would like to, and I think more than anything else, what I'd like to say is that, bravo. You know, we have, we started out in the Sherbrooke area, where, you know, we're one of the hot spots. But in general, across the townships, I think we have done what has to be done. And I think that is something that we can all be proud of. And it's something that I think we've seen a lot in the English community. And I think in terms of being in much more of a rural structure, it may have been one that we already have a good idea of what we have to do, because in many instances, you know, we have to travel to get to stores, we have to travel to get to entertainment, we have to travel to get to family. It's been difficult, but we've made the most of it. We've made the maximum use of the kinds of media, you know, with Zoom and all of that, and telephone. It's one where I think we have to, in a very real sense, you know, if there's no one to pat you on the back, give yourself a good big pat. Give yourself, I think, a sense of encouragement. We're coming through it. It's a long haul ahead, but we come from pioneering stock, and they really had tremendous hardships, and look where we are today. So I think if the ball has been thrown to us, we can take it, and we can make the most of this game, and I think we are going to. And I think we'll be in a position where everything might not look the same after. It may never look the same, but let's make it look the best that we possibly can.
Good message.
That's it.
Good. Anything else you'd like to add before we go, Jerry?
Well, the only thing that I, again, we have to perhaps I'll be very conscious that we will not have a Townshipers Festival. It's been postponed until next year. And it's a very wise decision, I think, is that with schools just being opened in the fall, if they are all opened, you know, for high school, then we're going to be at Galt. And you can just imagine the kinds of safety and health measures that would have to be put in place. It's just beyond the capacity of the school board, the school and townshipers at this time. So we want everybody to know that it was not an easy decision, but it is definitely the right decision. And I know there's a lot of people that have certainly enjoyed the last two events in Richmond High School and Athabasca High School, and it's going to be here in our own Sherbrooke area. So it'll happen next year, and it'll be bigger and better than ever imagined, I'm sure.
Okay, and definitely more appreciated, too.
I hope so.
Okay, well, thanks very much for being with us today, Jerry, and stay safe.
Well, thank you so very much. I really appreciate the opportunity, and you stay safe, and everybody out there stay safe, and one of these days we're going to be seeing each other.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. Have a good day. Bye.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.